Let's get down to business, taking a look at Wall Street. Dow Jones Industrial Average down 545 to close at 25,052. Yeah, I know. S&P 500 down 57 at 2,728. NASDAQ Composite down 92 at 7,329. Russell 2000 down 30 at 1545. Yield on the 10-year Treasury note down 9 basis points at 3.13%. Oil down $2.18 at $70.99. Gold up $29.20 at $12.24.60 per ounce. Well, after yesterday's crash, Wall Street pros are debating whether the current slide is signaling more severe problems for a bull market that is now more than 9 years old. And the answer is yes. We just don't know when and how those problems will manifest. There was a concern that prices would crater on the open. That didn't happen. Stocks opened lower, but nothing significant. Prices drifted lower throughout the session, and there was even some buying in bonds, sending the yield on the 10-year note lower. So this was a risk-off session, but no sign of panic, at least until about 2 p.m. Eastern time, at which point prices drifted below certain key technical levels, and the algorithms kicked in, and boom, Dow was suddenly down 698 points. That, in turn, triggered a buy signal, or maybe it was plunge protection. The NASDAQ fell as low as 72.74 today, down more than 10% from the most recent 52-week trading high of 8,133. Amazon, Netflix, and Alphabet are all in correction territory. The S&P 500 and the Dow Jones Industrial Average have further to fall to be in a correction, with both down about 6% from recent all-time highs. S&P 500 has now dropped for 6 straight sessions. It's dropped down below its 200-day moving average. There's some support for the S&P at 2690 to the round number of 2700. Below that, we're looking at the April lows of 2580. The all-world stock market down about 9.7% from its January peak and 7.5% from its September high. Dow Jones Industrial Average off right at 1,400 points in 2 days. And while the benchmark S&P 500 has fallen nearly 5% over the past week and year-to-date gains have shriveled to just 2%, the damage is actually much more widespread. Two-thirds of the stocks in the index are actually down more than 10% from their recent highs. That means that they are in the traditional definition of a correction. Also, 142 stocks in the S&P 500 as of Wednesday's market close were in a bear market, meaning they dropped 20% from recent highs. We'll probably have more after today. But anyway, the 142 stocks, that's 28% of the index. Micron and Tesla off 35% from their 52-week highs. Facebook down 30%. Netflix down 25% from its high. Down nearly 10% this week alone. Amazon off 17% from its high. Down nearly 10% this week alone. Nvidia, Intel, Alphabet, all also down more than 10% from one-year highs. With stocks on a losing streak and the Dow struggling to stay positive for the year, Trump called the Fed loco and wild, which is kind of like describing watching paint dry as exciting and thrilling. The Fed is maybe the least loco thing in Washington. Well, then Trump blamed the Fed for the stock market tanking. Fed has an almost impossible task of raising rates to normal non-emergency levels, and we know that monetary tightening inevitably leads to recession. That's what happens when money gets tight. Backseat driving the Fed, however, well, that's just so much bluster and blaming, and it's really not smart. History shows that trying to push a political agenda on the Fed has a tendency to end very poorly. Also, when the market was going up, Trump claimed all the credit. Now that the market is crashing, he blames the Fed. And while some people are concerned about rising interest rates, quick reminder, the Fed tries to hike rates when the economy is strong. Also, Trump should probably take some of the blame for uncertainty about his trade war with China. While the tariffs' impacts have yet to be felt as they have just been implemented, there is fear spreading that when company executives deliver their outlooks soon, the news won't be good. That's compounding fear that already has rippled through the financial world that after years of being dormant, inflation may finally be on the prowl. Earnings probably be in line, but we'll be watching forward guidance. And that could be ugly compared to the past few quarters. Anyway, the most common excuse for higher rates hitting stocks is that people will exit stocks in favor of bonds as yields move higher. Well, I don't buy that. Higher yields mean lower prices. Instead, stock investors run from equities because higher yields mean cash and credit is more expensive, which cuts into margins and slows growth, which in turn eats into earnings. So higher yields demand higher earnings to offset the higher expense, and that means PE, or price-to-earnings ratios, are now out of value. Something has to give. And earnings are not going to show the same kind of explosive growth in 2019 as we've seen so far this year. Of course, that's just a guess. Nobody really knows why the stock market goes up or down on any given day. We know that at 2 p.m. Eastern today, stocks sold off hard. A few minutes later, buying kicked in. We call it algorithmic trading. The computers take over. We know this because we see the volume spike. We don't really know why, other than to say we hit technical levels, but that doesn't really explain the why. It's possible to trade technical levels if you're a technician or a quant. Otherwise, don't even try it. You could bet that we'll see a bounce tomorrow morning, but that won't tell you where the market goes tomorrow afternoon. Is it a real rebound or a dead cat bounce? And nobody knows what the market will do next week. Is this a buying opportunity or the start of a long, painful decline? Wrong question. What's your plan B? That's what you should be asking. Earnings season kicks into high gear tomorrow. Rising interest rates, booming economy should, at least in theory, be good for bank stocks. But you couldn't tell it by looking at the bank stocks. Morgan Stanley is nearly 26% below its 52-week high. Goldman Sachs, 22% lower, both hitting 52-week lows. Shares of Wells Fargo down 21% from their recent high, also near a 52-week low. Citigroup shares down 13%. J.P. Morgan Chase down 7.6%. J.P. Morgan Chase and Citigroup among the companies scheduled to report tomorrow morning before the bell. Expectations are high for this earnings season. Analysts polled by FactSet expect S&P 500 earnings to have grown by 19%. In the third quarter. Now, in a risk-off environment, oil did not fare any better than stocks. Over the past 2 days, West Texas Intermediate crude is down $4 a barrel, or 5.3%, to finish today at $70.99. That's about a three-week low. Last week, hit $77 a barrel, posting its best level since November 2014. Now, this is risk-off, and there's been a search for safe haven. We saw that in the move over to bonds and gold, which popped over $29 an ounce today. In today's economic data, it looks like the Fed has price stability nailed. Consumer price index rose 0.1% in September. That marks the sixth consecutive increase in a row. Yet the increase in the cost of living over the past 12 months slowed again to 2.3% from 2.7%. Now, 2 months ago, the yearly rate hit a six-year high of 2.9%. A more closely followed measure that strips out food and energy, the core rate, also rose 0.1% last month. The yearly increase in the core rate was flat at 2.2%. About half of the increase in the consumer price index last month was tied to higher rents and the cost of home ownership. The cost of clothing increased for the first time in 4 months. Medical cost rose for the first time in 3 months. Prices for airline tickets and auto insurance also went up. Although gasoline prices actually rose last month, they didn't increase as much as they normally do in September. As such, the seasonal adjustments resulted in gas prices showing a decline in the CPI report. Food prices unchanged. The cost of used vehicles fell sharply. There was some good news for workers. After adjusting for inflation, hourly wages rose a solid 0.3% in September, and they are up 0.5% in the past year. Now, here's some extra importance on the CPI report. Social Security's inflation tether. The Consumer Price Index for Urban Wage Earners and Clerical Workers, it's known as CPIW, only takes into account 3 months of inflation data rather than a full year. The average reading of the CPIW during the third quarter of the previous year, in other words, July through September, that serves as the baseline figure. And while the average reading from the third quarter of the current year is the comparison, it takes the BLS a good week or so to compile the data for the CPI's W's, main spending categories and subcategories, but we know the numbers, even without the official proclamation. If the average reading from the third quarter of the current year rises from the average CPIW reading from the previous year, beneficiaries, Social Security beneficiaries, receive a raise commensurate with the percentage increase, rounded to the nearest 0.1%. Good news for beneficiaries is that prices most definitely rose on a year-over-year basis. The COLA, cost of living adjustment for 2019, is 2.8%. It's the highest annual raise that beneficiaries have received in 7 years. Works out to $39 a month for the average retired worker. Dow Industrials down 545 points at 25,052. S&P 500 down 57 at 2728. NASDAQ down 92 at 7,329. As always, follow along at moneyradio.com, live streaming and archived audio, and follow our daily blog at eatthebankers.com.